Today's program has been brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit internationalculinarycenter.com.
This is Mike Edison, host of Art Senses of Seizures. You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, please visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Sharp and Hot. I am your host, Chef Emily Peterson, coming to you live from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This is episode number 56, my second annual Halloween episode. Halloween is one of my favorite days of the whole year, and I've been doing a lot of work in the last 2 weeks saying no to things because I've realized I haven't been fully enjoying the things that excite me because I just have too much on my plate. My toddler, bless his soul, has stopped sleeping through the night. And so I spend a lot of time at 3 o'clock in the morning going through my, what has to get done? Who do I have to email? What do I have to do? What do I have to do for this and that? And oh my God, I forgot. So I've made a couple of adjustments in my life that I want to share with you because I think one of them is brilliant. And I feel like I've stumbled upon a real help for the stress of everyday life, which is I spend a lot of time driving, thinking about all of the things that I need to do, which generally speaking are emails that I need to send, like orders for classes or feedback to students. And so today I put in my car a big chunk of post-it notes and my favorite hot pink pen. And I just jot down while I'm driving and I don't have to look. I just write down some symbol or some scribble that will remind me, send internship thing to, the job posting for the internship to so-and-so. And then I stick that on my dashboard. And then I did that like 4 or 5 times. It made my job way more pleasant because I found that once I just unloaded it onto a piece of paper, I didn't have to like keep spinning it to remember. And then I got to a parking spot when I got to Heritage Radio and I banged through like 5 things that I realized I had to do, which when you're, not occupied by a screaming toddler, it doesn't actually take that long to make these things happen. So I felt very accomplished. And two of the things on those sticky notes were not to forget to address a listener question and a listener comment that came in over this week. The first one was related to my turkey advice from last week, which I realized the more I talk about how to cook a perfect bird, the more overwhelming the information becomes. And this was solidified when I got an email from Mark who said, I just listened to last week's show. I was surprised that when you got the question about brining a heritage bird, you did not suggest salting it ahead. It should provide the same benefits of brining in terms of keeping the bird moist while not having the flavor dilution impacts of a wet brine. Mark, you are absolutely right, and I did not in any way mean to insinuate a nude bird, an unseasoned bird, should go into the oven. The bird should absolutely be seasoned with salt and pepper very generously. It will provide some of the same moisture retention and also flavor enhancement. So absolutely add salt, pepper if you want to throw on some, dried herbs if you have them, some olive oil if you want to, make a wet rub, something like that. I didn't mean to insinuate that to preserve the heritage bird, one should do nothing to it. I meant that the salt brining would dilute the flavor. So I hope that that clarifies things. And then I got a tweet. I sound like someone who doesn't know how to use Twitter. I got a tweet from TBTL Jen asking if her stew that has andouille and rice in it can be called jambalaya. And the answer is it depends on the proportions of your rice because jambalaya is a Creole rice-based dish with other things added to it, but it's fundamentally rice with chicken, fish, sausage, herbs, heat of some chili peppers, onions added to the rice. So much like you couldn't call a stew a pilaf, you may not be able to call your stew a jambalaya unless the main component of your stew is rice. That you're using the word stew leads me to believe it is not, and so therefore, no, it would still be a stew. I hope that that's not disappointing. She did qualify her tweet by saying she'd been to New Orleans twice, and I really wanted to give her this one and say, absolutely. But the truth is, if you want to make jambalaya, I highly recommend Chef Paul Prudhomme's Louisiana Kitchen recipe. It is excellent. Everything comes together really quickly. And I know that recipe now like the back of my hand because it was my father's cookbook, my father's Bible growing up. I ate out of that cookbook. Okay, so those things out of the way, I want to introduce my esteemed guest, who I'm very excited to have here, Rosie Schaap. Welcome.
Thank you, Chef Emily. I'm so happy to be here. I love Halloween, and I want to talk about it as much as I can.
Okay, awesome. So give the listeners a background. Who are you? What are you famous
who
for?
Who am I? That's a big question. 17 years of therapy, and I'm still working on it. I'm a writer. And I'm a bartender. I write a monthly column for the New York Times Magazine called Drink, and I wrote a memoir called Drinking with Men. And in my memoir, I actually talk a little bit about how when I was a teenage girl, I was one of those kids who was always making crazy concoctions in the kitchen and, you know, ordering weird herbs through the mail. And I listened to a lot of Stevie Nicks and Led Zeppelin. And I, you know, I was this kind of wannabe witchy kid. And I think as I've grown older, in a way, making cocktails does that for me. I don't cook up weird, you know, sage and chamomile and all the stuff. And hyssop. Hyssop was big for some reason among us teenage witches in the 80s. We used a lot of hyssop. But now I mix drinks, and I think these things have something in common.
There is definitely an alchemy in drink mixing that I will say I am not the most talented drink mixer. I was a bartender right out of college to pay my rent, but it was in the age of cosmopolitans. So nothing was challenging. There was nothing challenging. There was no expectation of challenge, even in Park Slope, Brooklyn in 2001.
Yeah, but I have a feeling you're being a little tough on yourself. Because in my experience, anyone who has a good palate and knows what tastes good can make delicious drinks. And the reverse of that is most bartenders I know are good cooks.
Yeah. And I guess I just don't trust myself. I love nothing more. Someone told me, Deborah Harkness, I don't know if you're familiar.
I'm not.
She is an author who I think you would really like. She's written a series of books about being a reluctant witch.
Oh.
It's a really, really perfect. Fun series. But she said that her greatest joy is having someone else cook her breakfast.
Mm.
My greatest joy is having someone else make me a drink.
Oh.
It could be as simple as a tap beer.
Right.
But finding a really good cocktail bartender or a place to go, I love everything about it. I love the showmanship. And I don't have that. Like, I don't have that innate desire to
entertain
that way.
I'm feeling it here. I think you actually do.
Oh, yeah.
I think you do. You're obviously good at talking to people.
That part I've got that.
And that's crucial. Although, I mean, of course, there is the model of bartender who's very taciturn and grouchy, and they have a place, too. But I think if you like engaging with people and you have a good sense of what's going to taste good and look good and things that are also important in making food, you can be a great bartender.
I'll try it. I mean, I have bought, I have a whole bottle of Aperol in my liquor cabinet because I went through, a short Aperol thing not realizing I was...
Everybody did, yeah.
Not realizing, you need a teaspoon. And why it doesn't come in a pint bottle is, I don't understand.
Yeah, a little of that goes a long way. And that's true with many bitter things. Mm-hmm. I think there's kind of a plateau in that great bitter craze right now. And I love bitter flavors, but, you know... All flavors can taste good.
Right. And I think in cooking, too, the finding the balance
absolutely.
Of each of your, you know, taste
absolutely.
Components.
I think people get tired of hearing the word balance when it comes to cocktails and cooking. But it's true.
It's
That's
so
the big
true.
Thing.
Yep. So in terms of Halloween, I have many fond memories pre-marriage, pre-child, post 21.
Because all the fun ends there.
It's just different.
I know.
It's just different. But Halloween is a big deal when you're a bartender.
It is, and I'm really excited because I'm almost never behind the bar on Halloween, and this Halloween I will be behind the bar, and it's partly thanks to you. Usually I'd be behind the bar right now.
Oh, wow.
But because I'm sitting here talking to you and drinking a delicious Bloody Mary.
From the bar at Roberta's.
From the bar at Roberta's, which I just have to point out because, of course, listeners can't see. It has this unusual and majestic sort of flourish of romaine lettuce in it, which you don't often see.
It does. It looks like wings or like a butterfly.
See, you see wings and a butterfly, and I see this sort of Halloween-y swamp thing situation, this green creature crawling out of my bloody drink.
Yeah.
But, of course, that's because that's what I want to see. Halloween is powerful that way. So I'm really excited. I'm going to be in costume, but I'm not going to say what it is. I'm really excited about it. And I think, you know, it's going to be busy, But I'm still going to bring my tarot cards and do like quick one-card readings for certain lucky customers.
Where is this?
This is at South in the South Slope part of Brooklyn.
All right. I will be trick-or-treating with a two-year-old who's going to be the White Rabbit.
Adorable.
From Alice in Wonderland.
I mean, a little trippy for a little kid, but...
I think until he is old enough, maybe next year, but maybe 4 or 5, when he's old enough to tell me what he wants to be...
Yeah, no, that's really cute.
I'm okay letting him be a little trippy. I'm trying to cultivate a little witch, or a little, a little warlock in him. So... I'm just thinking about the Halloweens that were so fraught with like expectation. And I'm curious to know what your feeling is on the whole. I've heard two sides of this conversation.
Okay.
The slutty bacon costume. The slutty Ebola costume.
Oh.
And on the my first reaction was like, yeah, that's kind of like taking a tube. Like you're going too far.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, like, Dan Savage, who we talked about briefly off the air, I love him, and he said that Halloween for straight people should be like the gay pride parade for gay people. Like, we should be whoever we want.
I think that is true. I think good taste to some extent is subjective. And
overrated.
Or overrated, right. There's that great Diana Vreeland line about a little bad taste being healthy.
Right, yeah.
And I agree with that. And Halloween, of course, is a perfect opportunity to just, show off your incredibly bad taste. It's day a year when that's okay. I wouldn't touch an Ebola-themed costume myself, but I suppose I would defend someone else's right to do it.
I'm not even I have to assume that it was real. I want to say that I saw it on The Onion, but I'm fairly certain that it is real. I mean, someone's got to capitalize on, silver linings, right? So what are you drinking on Halloween? Are there sort of fall themed or vampire themed things? Like, how do you spin your Halloween cocktail making?
Right. I've been thinking about this a lot, and there are kind of obvious choices in a way. Obviously, I'm drinking a Bloody Mary right now, as I was telling you before we went on air, I've been having a recharged, reinvigorated love affair with the Bloody Mary. I hadn't drunk them for a while. I've been traveling a lot more than usual lately. So I just love them, and I knew there would be a good one here. But that's kind of obvious. Anything with blood in the name seems like a good choice. Zombie, which, it's so funny because it's called a zombie because, it is a strong drink, but it's also a super, super sweet drink.
Is it green?
No, it's, sort of brownish. It's rum and peach schnapps and, that kind of thing. Not for everybody, but it's called a zombie, so I get it. But, first of all, as I was saying before, I think all cocktail making is kind of potion making. So I think just as you can be anything you want to be for Halloween, you should drink anything you want to drink on Halloween. I find something a little magical, and I know I'm not alone in this among bartenders in a Sazerac. There's something, it's hard to say, and it's not just because of the absinthe. But people seem to ascribe a kind of magic to drink.
And anything that comes out of New Orleans, you have the corpse
revivor. Exactly.
Death in the afternoon.
Yeah, all of these New Orleans drinks. Mm-hmm. Of course, anything with New Orleans. And I was fascinated by that jambalaya question, by the way.
Yeah.
Anything from New Orleans, but there's just this kind of elegant, slightly alchemical thing, I think, about a Sazerac. Last year, I tried a variation on it. And I wouldn't dare call it a Sazerac when it doesn't have rye. I tried a version with a very smoky Scotch whiskey.
Okay.
And I feel like the smoke added a little more Halloween magic to it.
I gotta say, I have only been to New Orleans once and ate and drank more than I ever have in my life.
That's what happens there.
And it was such a haunted place to be. And I felt like... I could never move there. My sister-in-law toys with the idea of moving there, which would be perfect for me. Jessica, if you're listening, I would love that decision. because I feel like it's a place that I want to go and explore the history and the culture of.
Right.
But I couldn't live there full time because I would just be, I think, overwhelmed by like the haunted energy of the place.
Yeah.
And I probably would be dead inside 5 years from either like alcohol poisoning or, liver failure. Right. Eating myself
death by jambalaya and po' boys.
I came home fascinated by the story of Marie Laveau.
Oh, yeah.
And there is not a definitive biography.
There isn't. And there's so much folklore attached to her. And it's funny that you bring it up, because one thing I've also been thinking about a lot, almost as important to a bartender as making drinks, is making a playlist.
Right,
so I've been agonizing for the past week, and I did come up with like a seven-hour
Halloween playlist,
okay. And there's a song about Marie Laveau, and there's a great version by Dr. John.
Oh, wow.
So you can't get more New Orleans than Dr. Yeah. John singing about the great voodoo priestess legend Marie Laveau.
When you go to New Orleans, you can go to what's reputed to be her grave,
right.
But it may not be. We don't know. No one really knows. But you make a wish and you leave something there. And
yeah.
I did that. And I'm not going to say what my wish
can't.
Was.
You can't.
But I do not feel the energy of like protection from that from that experience.
Yeah. You know, and if it is her grave, I'm sure she's coming in and out of it as she wants anyway.
Right.
So maybe she's not home when some people go visit.
We need to take a quick break. And then when we come back, I'm going to share a recent ghost story that just happened to me. Because you share a love of ghosts, right?
I do.
I have a very good ghost story that just happened to me in broad daylight.
I can't wait.
The International Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
Welcome back to Sharp and Hot. I am your host, Chef Emily Peterson, coming to you. as we're coming back from the break, I'm like, I have to cough. Coming to you live from Roberta's
Solidarity.
Pizza. All right. In Bushwick, Brooklyn. So before the break, I said I was going to share a ghost story with you. Joining me in the studio is my esteemed guest, Rosie Schaap. She and I share a love of haunted ghost things, and it being Halloween, I thought it would be a good day to bring her in. And timely story just happened. I go running and my son comes with me because I can put him in a stroller and I don't have to think about him for an hour. He just looks at the trucks and the dogs and we don't have to worry about him falling down anything or plugging anything in. So we leave our house. We go out onto the main road. There's an office park whose lawn we run along. Then there's a funeral parlor, which has an El Camino that when it's time for your flowers to be moved from the funeral home to the cemetery, they put all your flowers in the back of the El Camino.
Nice.
Which is pretty boss,
yeah.
I think. Then we get to the edge of their driveway. There's a Subway restaurant. Can I call it a restaurant? The sandwich
sure.
shop. And then down the hill and around the lake and back again. So we have done this run, if it's not raining, every day since January. January 1st was my resolution to become a runner. So every day, snow, in the snow we go. We don't really go if it's really raining. He has never expressed any interest in anything other than the trucks rolling by.
Mm-hmm.
The other morning, not night, broad daylight, we leave the house and there is, all the vehicles are assembled for somebody's funeral. Which is normal, and it's kind of interesting to live next to a funeral home and you see what a business it really is.
Yeah.
Like somebody's out that evening, there's a wake. We run along the lawn of the office park. We get to the edge of the driveway for the funeral home, and he snaps up and sits bolt upright in his stroller where he had been lounging, usually with one arm behind his head, and locks his eyes on something. I can't say he makes eye contact because I don't see what he sees, but there are no people around. There's the El Camino, the hearse, and the family, the limousine. He locks contact, and as we pass by this building, he starts saying, bye, bye-bye.
Wow. Bye.
Waving. And he's looking at the same point in space as we go until he's got his back completely turned around. And then he looks at me over his shoulder and he says, Mommy, say bye-bye. And
wow. I was like,
and my hair stands up and he lays back down and it's never happened again. And I don't know if it's going to happen again, but I just assume someone was standing there waiting for their transport to
sure.
wherever they're going.
And it sounds like a friendly ghost.
Oh, it
like
sounded
a ghost
totally friendly.
Who wanted to engage with a little kid in a nice way, and the kid wasn't freaked out.
Totally not.
That's
so
good.
Then the other morning, yesterday or two mornings ago, he stands up and starts looking out our front window, saying, people, look at the people, all the people. So now I'm like, is he fucking with me?
Now it's just getting weird.
It's just getting weird.
Yeah.
So on Halloween, the Halloween episode that I had last year, the inaugural Halloween episode, I had a psychic medium on who was on who said, kids under five, completely open and receptive because they have no realization that there's something amiss.
Right, there's no baggage.
Yep.
Yeah, that's great. So. I kind of wish I could go back to that age just for a little while.
I do.
And be that
yeah,
way.
I wish I could see what he saw.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't have an explanation. I've really racked my brain because I am like a logical, bright, I think I'm bright, smart,
sure.
educated person. And I'm like, nope. It's a ghost. Like, obvious answer is usually the right one.
I think so, too.
You have a ghost story?
Well, I have a few. I went to college in Vermont, and we were talking about how New Orleans has this feeling like no other place in the world, that intense New Orleans mojo that I don't think you can't not feel it, really. Even if you're a very rational, skeptical kind of person, New Orleans can get you. And I think Vermont is that kind of place, too, in a very different, much more subdued Yankee kind of way, obviously. I'm a native New Yorker. I don't drive. If I can't take mass transit or use my feet, I can't get anywhere. And for a couple of years, I lived about a mile and a half from the campus, and I just walk every day, and the shortcut was through the woods. And there were these mornings, I know this sounds so crazy, there were these mornings where I really got this message from the woods saying, don't come in here.
Wow.
Just don't. Just take the long way around. Don't come in. This, like, ancient, crazy woods talking to me. Yes, you heard it here first. The woods talked to me. I did. But then I thought about it, and like, I made a special little necklace as a kind of talisman, and what I did, I started wearing that. Keep in mind, I was 20. not that I wouldn't still do it. I started that, and I started asking permission, you know, where normally I just walk right onto the path and through the woods. I stopped just stepping into the woods and started saying, kind of like, hey, woods, is it okay if I walk this way? And then it felt very open to me between the talisman and the asking.
Wow.
And I felt that the ghosts that animated those woods were cool with me once I showed a little politeness,
mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
Like, who was I to just barge into their space?
I live in a very old house, and I'm certain that I share it with the energy of people who have lived there in the past. And in the past year, I think this hadn't happened yet when I talked about it last year, a light bulb exploded in our house. Like, and it there
and
feels
that's scary.
Like, it was
yeah.
terrifying. And my reaction was to be like, not polite. It was like, hey, this is our house too.
Yeah.
But I had that same out loud conversation.
Yeah,
like,
you got to talk to them.
And since then, we've been coexisting peacefully.
That's,
knock on wood.
Yeah. A slightly more recent ghost story. Last summer, the summer of 2013, I went to wonderful Nantucket Book Festival, and I'd been booked in this inn. I forget the first name, but it's the something Coffin Inn. Scary Yankee sea captain whose last name was Coffin.
Uh-huh.
And I go online to find out about it, and it turns out to be notoriously haunted. And normally, if I'm in a haunted house, I'll leave a little offering if I hear there's a, you know, and it usually involves booze, duh. But I felt like, an old Puritan, that might just piss him off more. So
piece
I had
of beef jerky.
Or a hardtack or
right.
something like that. So I had a little talk, and I was like, I'm not going to mess with you. I'd prefer that you don't mess with me. And this thing happened. I set my alarm on my phone to wake up the next morning to go to some festival events. I knew I set my phone on the side of the bed, woke up in the morning, couldn't find my phone. The alarm didn't go off. And it was like halfway under the bed when
wow.
I went looking for it. And of course, it's possible I woke up in the middle of the night and knocked it off with my elbow and it went sliding. But I think the ghost was being kind of funny.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm going to mess with you just a teeny, teeny bit.
Right. I love the idea that you could persist after death, you know, that one could be mischievous and have all of the, like, I don't know. And not forever. I wouldn't want to do it forever.
No,
but it would be
tough.
Fun to, like, just for, like, a little while.
Yeah.
Or, like, dip in and out. Like, if Marie Laveau can come and go, I want to be able to come and go as well. So, do you have any cooking questions for me? The jambalaya question was, you know, that was a hit. So I'm curious if
yeah,
you...
Yeah, and I'm actually going to New Orleans for Thanksgiving.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Fun.
And I'm so excited. I have a friend who moved there in the last year, and he invited a bunch of his New York friends down.
I want that friend.
Yeah, and and I love to cook, and another friend who will be there loves to cook, and I think we can cook very peacefully together, which is a sign of true friendship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cooking together and traveling together.
Yeah.
I feel like those are the two.
No, friends I can cook with happily, I know, are the best friends in the world. So we're a little torn between a New Orleans Thanksgiving menu and a more traditional Northeastern. Is it okay to mix that up?
Yes, 100%. And I'll tell you that my husband and I did, I think I mentioned this on last week's show, we did a Mexican mole turkey one year. We had no guests. It was just the two of us, and it was awesome. Full Mexican spread. We used Rick Bayless's cookbook for the mole recipe.
So great.
From scratch. It was awesome. The downside is you don't have any traditional leftovers.
Oh.
So when you're picking which you want to mix in... Think about your leftover situation. Mm-hmm. How many, if you don't need them because you're going to be eating out or you're only going to be there a couple days, then I would say everything is fair game. If you know you're going to want a turkey sandwich the next day, then you have to accommodate that in your cooking. We ended up doing a full Thanksgiving spread the following weekend because we were like remiss that we didn't have like open-faced turkey sandwiches. What would be a traditional New Orleans Thanksgiving dish?
Well, one of the other friends who's going, who I'll be cooking with, Catherine, she's a great reporter and writer, and she's very research. She's an intense researcher, so she did a bunch of research, and I don't remember everything she came up with, but you know, she emailed different menus to all of us. It seems that some kind of oyster dressing, either instead of or in addition to a traditional bread stuffing.
And I think oyster dressing could replace a bread stuffing and still be fine in the leftovers. The oysters are cooked.
Yeah, you think for... Yeah, I was wondering about that.
The oysters are cooked, so I think... The only problem is that it could potentially all get eaten the night, you know, on Thanksgiving.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
Right?
There's nothing wrong with that. I think I have to make a bread stuffing just because I make the best bread stuffing in the world.
How do you make your bread stuffing?
So I have to do that. Well, I use a few different kinds of bread, from very dark to very light.
Okay.
And apples and sausage and chestnuts. I really tear up my fingers for hours peeling my chestnuts. I know people have tricks for that. And if you have one that really works, I think it's just suffering.
I think
you have to suffer.
It's like pomegranates. It's just part of the fun.
Yeah, no, it's just a very traditional, very, very chewy, bready, sausagey, of course, shallots
awesome.
and stuff like that, too. It's really good.
And what are you going to be drinking?
Well, since I'll be in New Orleans, I'll definitely be making Sazerac for a crowd. And I really love cider with Thanksgiving dinner.
Cider, I think, and I'm curious as the bartender in the room, because I feel like I should be calling myself a bartender.
I think
based
you can.
On our earlier conversation. cider seems to be like the new it. It might be the new bitter drink. Cider is the new bitter drink.
Well, I think also the legions of gluten-free people have really helped it boom. I've always loved cider. I can eat or drink just about anything. I always love cider, but I like a slightly funky, earthy cider. I think it's really delicious with the flavors of Thanksgiving.
Sure.
Whether it's a great Norman cider or Farnham Hills, a cider from New Hampshire that I love, that's become I like it more than wine at Thanksgiving.
Apple prices are soaring this autumn because of cider making, which I can't fault the cider makers for their, you know, growth in popularity.
Sure.
But I went to the farmer's market and even I was like, $7 a pound for apples.
Yeah.
What is happening?
Yeah, it's a lot.
I have not read the full article because I just didn't. I got distracted. I've read half it. So in this upcoming issue of The New Yorker, there's a article titled "What's So Bad About Gluten?"
Oh,
and my long-time listeners and new listeners know that I have no sensitivity for people who tell me that they're gluten-free. I mean, to your face, I do, which is something I'm working on. I'm working on being more transparent when people tell me, "Oh yeah, I discovered is I'm gluten sensitive." Because in my head, it's like every red bell and whistle is like, "No, you're not. No, you're not. No, you're not." It's like when people told me that they were allergic to sulfites in wine, and right. I would say, can you drink orange juice? Oh, yeah, every morning. I was like, then it's not the sulfites. Right, it's probably too much wine, right. Which no one wants to hear, especially when you're trying to sell them a bottle in a liquor store.
Of course.
But there's an article. So I've gotten through the first half, which I'm waiting for the punchline, which is the New Yorker's going to agree with me that there is, in fact, no such thing as gluten sensitivity.
Well, I'm going to have to read that. You know, I've known some people whose sensitivity does seem completely real.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. There's a lot of double-blind studies because those people, for someone who believes they are gluten sensitive, and I will not take this away from anyone, it is real.
Yeah.
It is as real as ghosts are to you and I. And there are people on the outside looking in on us being like, you two are crazy. So if it makes you...
Nothing I haven't heard before.
If it makes you happy to exclude gluten from your life, that may be... And it makes you feel better, then more power to you.
Sure.
The science says it's not the gluten. That it could be a host of other things. But that being said, I won't bore my listeners with something that they hear me go on about from week to week as time goes by. So tell me the name of your book and how can the listeners find you?
My book that came out last year, the memoir, is called Drinking with Men. And I have a website, rosieshapp.com, but I really need to update it. But you can also read me once a month in the New York Times Magazine.
That's so exciting. And I have to confess that my in-laws offer me their New York Times every week, and I always demur because I realize I'm never going to get to it. I have a stack of things that I want to read. And now I have a really good reason to start fishing at the magazine.
I like to think so.
Yeah, you've given me a really good reason to be more literate. Rosie Shapp, thank you so much for coming on Sharp and Hot. Until next week, everybody, enjoy Halloween and keep playing with fire and knives.
Yay! Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.